proceed with the third case of the morning. This is Doris Isbell versus Allstate Insurance. Ms. Ramshaw?
My name is Laura Allen.
I'm sorry. We've got two people arguing here. I'm sorry. You're Laura Allen?
I am.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent Doris Isbell in the main appeal, and she's here this morning. And I also represent James Schneider in the cross appeal. The issues presented by Doris Isbell in her appeal are whether there was sufficient evidence for a jury to find that age was a motivating factor in Allstate's decision to terminate the agent's employment contracts. The second issue is whether Allstate was motivated to fire Doris Isbell to deprive her of medical insurance benefits in violation of ERISA. And the third point that I'd like to touch on this morning is whether it was illegal retaliation for Allstate to condition its offer of exclusive agency on signing a release of rights. Now, on the age discrimination claims, the issue in this case is really very simple. Whether viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to Doris Isbell, a jury could find age discrimination was a motivating factor, and here are the facts that I think the
jury
would...
Now, that's with regard to her.
As regard to her.
Because there are a lot of people who are in the same boat.
There are. There's over 6,000 of them. And this group came to be, Your Honor, because in the early 1990s, Allstate stopped hiring employee agents to sell insurance. From that point on, they hired only what are called exclusive agents or independent contractors to sell insurance. So as the 90s progressed, though, you had this group of employee agents who'd been hired back in the 80s that were there and were continuing to age. And Allstate has conceded in its latest filing, a motion to strike part of my reply brief, that it was aware that these employee agents, as they continued with their careers in the company, were older. Rodney Daniels, the benefits specialist for Allstate, testified they were aware that the employee agents were older than non-agents, other employees in the company. That's at 512 in the record. Ed Liddy, who was COO at the time and or CEO and later became chairman of the board at the time that the agents were terminated, testified there was clearly a sense within Allstate of the aging or the age of these agents. In addition to that, Allstate had a research center out in California, and it's still there, and they decided they wanted to know if there was a correlation between age and productivity. And an example of this is at 922, 923 in the record, where Tim Olino testifies, we wanted to know, we studied age as it related to productivity. And they generated data.
If Allstate wanted to go to the system of independent agents, how would they go about it, in your view, without violating the age discrimination?
Well, Your Honor, to answer that question would mean that what they should have done is not study age and productivity.
Well, but they made a change in the way they did business that affected everybody, regardless of your age and how long you worked for the company and so on. How would they, if they decided we want to change the way we do business, how could they have done that, in your view, without committing age discrimination?
Well, our case is not based on the fact that 90% or so of the employee agents were over 40. If you just had that situation and Allstate said, you know what, we want to change the way we do business. We've been hiring exclusive agents, and now we want everybody to be exclusive agents. They could. I wouldn't be standing here today with an age discrimination case, but that's not what happened.
Well, what did happen, though, is they, at some point in the early, mid-80s, I forget what you said.
Early 90s,
they decided we're only going from henceforth, it's only going to be, what do you call them, independent contractors, or what's the word?
Exclusive agents.
Exclusive agents, okay. I don't care how old they are, when that it's just natural that there are no new people hired over a 10-year period, we'll say, that are in-house. What is the word? What's the employee?
Employee agent.
That's the general word for employee as opposed to the independent contractor, I'll go. So for 10 years or 7 or 8 years or whatever it is, they're not hiring anybody. So it's pretty easy math. If you're not hiring anyone, there's not going to be anybody in that category, and so everybody who was in that category is going to be at least 7 or 8 years older than they were
when
this came up. So as Judge Evans asked, how do you avoid that? Do you have to show that you hired people who were over 40 as well for the independent agent?
No, I think the problem I'm having in answering your question is that over the year and a half that they considered what to do with the employee agents, age was the motivating factor. They didn't come upon this situation and it just happened to be that they
were aging
employees.
You have to depend upon these studies that were made primarily to establish your case here, though, don't you?
That's only one aspect of our case.
You don't have much of a case without the studies doing it.
Well, we do, Your Honor, and a lot of it is in writing, which does help our case. If you go back and look, there's no legal reason why Allstate should have been studying the correlation between age and productivity of these agents at its research center. There's no reason at all. If you want to make a change to exclusive agents, why do you need to study the correlation between age and productivity?
Was the basis of compensation of these exclusive agents was different than the employee agents, I assume. Is that right?
It was. It was a different contract.
Well, I mean, was it more of a commission basis as opposed to a salary basis?
It was all commission basis, Your Honor.
How about the employees? Were they all on commission?
It was a combination of salary and commission with benefits.
Well, that's a sort of a typical change that you make in your sales force from salary to commission, isn't it? I mean, that would be an adequate reason to make this change, irrespective of the age implications of it.
But in this case, Your Honor, age was a motivating factor. Allstate not only studied the correlations between age and productivity, they actually reached what they thought were conclusions that productivity declines with age. You don't need to generate those kinds of studies to make a change in an employee group. This finding that age declines with productivity, productivity declines with age, found its way into a report that was disseminated to Ed Liddy, Bob Gary, Chuck Martin, all the people who later made the decision to fire the employee agents. And that report stated this finding even stronger. It said, we've got an aging agent workforce, and this may create a potential generational mismatch between these agents and the customers. Again, to answer your question, if you're just going to make a contract change, why do you need to study the productivity of the agents as they age and come to the conclusion they're going to be too old to attract the customers that we want to attract? That's what makes this case different.
How many employee agents over 40 became exclusive agents?
Well, the statistics that I was given by Allstate, if you do the math, and this is in the record, about 95% of these employee agents ultimately left the company because of this program, this change.
Well, based on what Mr. Schneider got, a book worth $120,000, a bonus for signing the waiver, and I don't know what else, he got some kind of a waiver of a debt. I mean, that was now. And I know you're on a different side, but in his case, or just for example, could he have then become an exclusive agent?
Well, the $120,000 that he received from the agent, he sold his business.
So, in fact, he could have kept that and proceeded as an exclusive agent.
Yes, yes. The issue, though, that I'm addressing is in the termination of the contract. There was age discrimination. And in the Ameritech case that I've cited in my brief, the court says, yes, there may have been a different option available. But if there was age discrimination in the initial employment decision, despite that another job was offered, that's what the court needs to look at. And that's what I'm looking at here, not so much the terms of the other offer. I want to go back to this report that I've talked about where Allstate actually disseminated throughout this company this idea that these agents were not only aging, but they may not attract customers. This report was also added to by John Villard during the initiative that kind of was kicked off by this report, and this was an initiative to find out what are our future sales force going to look like. Villard was in charge of selecting agents, coming up with a way to do that, and also trying to get the employee agents who were still in the company, this was over 6,000 of them, to convert. And he reached the same conclusion that the research center had, was that there was a correlation between age and productivity. Again, why would this be necessary, simply to make a contract change, to be studying the productivity of these people? It's because they were coming to the conclusion that productivity declines with age. Villard reached it. He was not an isolated actor here. He testified in his deposition that he
discussed. Did the study show a correlation with anything except age? Or was this all an age study?
Well, it was basically age. There were other factors studied. And one of the things.
I mean, I wouldn't think it's unusual that a firm of this sort would want to study the productivity of their agents.
But they could think of.
Age and various other things may be involved.
But there's no legal reason for them to do that. They couldn't articulate a single legal reason why they did that. They wanted to, in fact, they testified they wanted to see how productive people are as they age. That's an illegal reason. That would be no different than studying, let's see who's more productive, men or women, or African Americans or whites. It has no place in the workplace. And there was no reason to make this contract change based on productivity. In addition, you have this report circulating out there that these agents are aging and there's going to be they may not be able to attract the customers. You have Villard circulating a report among top management that there's a correlation between age and productivity. And then you have these studies that the court referred to earlier that said we need to convert these employee agents. And the first reason listed on many of these pages are 50% of these employee agents are over 50 years old. Why would that be other than you want them to convert because of age? And Ed Liddy in his deposition testified, yes, that's what it says in that report. And of course,
if you put salesmen on commission, you may assume they will be more productive.
Your Honor,
an assumption that a lot of people make anyway.
But it's illegal to do it for it to be motivated by age.
Were the new people hired as exclusive agents all young, under 40?
I don't have that evidence, Your Honor. What I do have is evidence that Allstate maintained employees at call centers where they weren't insurance agents, but they did sell insurance and service policies. They absorbed some of the duties of the employee agents. Allstate produced some of that information, and the vast majority of those people were in their 20s.
That's sort of the in-house stuff, isn't it? Maybe what they call company clients as opposed to
book. That would be kind of the people that took over some of the duties.
Just doing, people just basically taking orders over the phone.
Right.
Yeah.
And they took over some of the duties of these insurance agents, these employee agents that were converted over. I see my time has expired.
Yeah, you can reserve the rest of your time. Yeah.
Thank you, Your Honor.
How are you all divided up here?
Your Honor, I wish you had 2 minutes if she had to let up.
Huh?
She gave me 2 minutes if she has left to give me.
All right, whatever. Right? go ahead. It won't take me 2 minutes to figure it out. Go ahead.
Your Honor, Paul Ramshaw for the EEOC. We believe that Mr. Schneider never promised not to sue Allstate, so there's no breach here. But I would like to focus on the second argument about whether the commission's regulation applied to his conduct of assuming there was a breach, did the commission's regulation apply? Allstate keeps arguing that this would be retroactive, but it clearly is not. The question is, what's the state of the law when the conduct occurs that's allegedly a breach or a violation? For example, if your rights under a pre-existing contract are affected by a new law or a new regulation. For example, assume you're the employer and you hired me in 1960 under an employment contract that had compulsory retirement at age 60. In 1967, Congress passes the ADEA, and now mandatory retirement is not legal until you're 65. So in 1970, when I turn 60 and you try to retire me, you can't do that legally anymore. You had the right to do that under our original agreement, but the law changed that. Same thing's true here. He signed his release before the commission's reg became effective, but then once in January 2001, the commission's reg became effective and said agreements like that cannot impose penalties, and therefore when he sued 9 months later, the reg applied. If no further questions, thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Godfrey?
Thank you.
As the court knows, I'm Rick Godfrey. I represent Allstate. The procedural posture on this appeal involves three claims: retaliation, age discrimination, ERISA violation. Schneider did not appeal that. The EEOC itself.
Well, as the EEOC says, though, we're permitted to affirm on any basis of support in the record. And they make a pretty convincing case, don't they, that, well, you would disagree, but it seems a fairly convincing case that he didn't promise not to sue, that all you get was an affirmative defense.
That's the argument, and the question for the court is whether there's a remedy for a breach of release. Take this outside of the ADEA context. Does someone get to in a regular commercial case, let's say I represent GM in a case, and I settle a case in front of Judge Leinenweber, and then the next day I'm the plaintiff, and then the next day after I get my money, I take the money, I run, I cash the check, and then I refile the same lawsuit. That's essentially what took place here with Mr. Schneider. He took the money, he signed the release, he got the advice of counsel, and he ran. And so the question for this court on the cross appeal is whether there's a remedy that Allstate has when someone breaches a release.
Now, well, the remedy is to write it in the agreement. Say, any money you get, if you sue, you have to give it back.
Well, I didn't give it back.
I said, but if you... That wasn't written in...
No, it shouldn't have to be, because there's a reliance concept and there's a restitution concept. But if the court were to say, look, it's a release, it's an affirmative defense, or if the court were to say your real damages are attorney's fees, and we chose not to go after attorney's fees because we didn't keep our records good enough to allocate between Schneider's case and Isbell's case, then I think that would be a change in the law. I don't think the regulation can apply retroactively. But that's a little bit of the tail wagging the dog here in terms of this cross-appeal.
Well, you're saying a release is the same thing as a covenant not to sue, aren't you?
Not really.
Well,
no.
Why if aren't you saying that? You can breach a release. Well, a release is just a defensive instrument as far as I'm concerned.
Well, if you release your claims and then you sue on them, question whether that's a lawsuit in good faith. I submit it is not. But the point is we did not ask for a covenant not to sue for a very good reason. We did not want to be accused of a charge filing ban or inhibiting someone's right to challenge the validity of the release. He could have sued challenging the validity of the release, saying it was not in compliance with the OWBPA, or I violated it in some other respect, et cetera, but he did not do that. Instead, he filed a lawsuit challenging the underlying conduct, alleged retaliation, alleged discrimination, alleged ERISA violation. And those claims were released.
And you had a complete defense against that because he signed a release. So
right, but
why
we also
are you
had,
complaining at this point?
Well, we're complaining because we had to defend the lawsuit for 2 years and had to spend all this time, money, and effort, and there ought to be a remedy for that. In terms of the claims,
the attorney's fees next time, I guess.
Maybe we should do that. We keep them more accurately to segregate between the one case versus the other. But we chose the lesser of the quantum of damages in this case, which was just the consideration, the value of the reliance or restitutionary interest.
How could that be the lesser? It certainly wouldn't have cost $120,000 to defend this case when you have that release.
We had to do all the discovery, Your Honor.
Oh.
Now, you're claiming as damages the $100,000 that was paid to him by this other agent, right?
Yes.
Based on what exactly?
Well, the other agent...
Where did you lose the $100,000?
Well, very simple. We gave him the economic interest in the book of business. It's like we gave him a Cadillac, and he then sold the Cadillac and got the cash for the Cadillac. He didn't have the Cadillac to sell to the other person until we gave it to him. He didn't have the economic interest in the book of business until we transferred that to him in exchange for the release. That plus the $5,000.
You're valuing that at the amount that the other agent paid him, is it?
That's what the record shows, yes. Uh-huh. It was almost simultaneous transaction. In terms of retaliation, their claim, Your Honor was on the one panel in the Stone case, and Your Honor wrote the opinion in the Rogers case, setting forth very precisely the elements of the claim. And as Judge Herndon meticulously examined the claim, they don't meet any of the elements. Here, the termination took place in November 1999. There was no protected activity. There was nothing, no retaliation. Instead, what took place here was there was a tremendous wealth transfer opportunity that was offered to these agents, particularly Isabel and Snyder. You have four options. Three options, you get a wealth transfer. On the fourth option, if you want to retain your rights, make a business decision, retain your rights, and you get a basic severance. Snyder took the wealth transfer, got over $126,000. Isabel decided to retain her rights and to sue. That was her choice, but under Rogers and Stone, there can't be any retaliation as a matter of law. Judge Herndon was very clear on that. She didn't engage in protected activity. There was no causal nexus. She did not suffer any employment action that was adverse as a result of what Allstate did. Your Honor wrote Judge Evans wrote a very, very good opinion a few years ago on this point. In the Lloyd case.
I've only had one good one.
No. On this point. Actually, many of the opinions that we've cited in this case, either this panel, a member of this panel wrote, or you're all on the opinions. But the point about this opinion, because it captures this very well, the Lloyd case was against Brunswick. It was an age discrimination case. And Your Honor said, the whole point of this mess is that he had a clear choice. He could get some money from Brunswick and pursue a discrimination claim, or he could waive the claim and get a lot more money. He chose the latter. End of case. That's what happened here. Ms. Snyder didn't choose the latter, so she retained her right to sue, but that's not retaliation. Now on the age claim. Look, this was a business reorganization. It was applied across the board regardless of age. She can't meet the elements because Allstate didn't discriminate on the basis of age. You asked about the studies. Those studies related to other initiatives that the people who were involved in this decision were not involved in. There was a study, and it's part of the record, as to why they did and were interested in changing. It's found on page 1383. It found that the independent exclusive agent contractors, the independent contractors, were more profitable. Their sales were increasing, while the employee agent sales were declining. And so they made a uniform change. But as Judge Herndon found, critically, not this did they make the change, they made a uniform offer to everyone. You know, age discrimination is where you treat people differently because of age. And you'd only fire people who were older, for example. Here, they terminated everyone, and then they said to every single person, regardless of age, here's the deal. You have four options. A tremendous wealth transfer for the first three, or if you don't want to exercise that wealth transfer, then fine. You retain your rights, and it's your business decision. In response to the question of how many, Your Honor asked the question, how many of the agents who were terminated stayed on, who were older? She misreads the data. The data is very clear. Almost 60% of the people over the age of 40 at the time of the termination are still independent contractor exclusive agents of Allstate today. Allstate didn't want to lose these agents. It simply wanted a business reorganization to have a more efficient, competitive marketplace. And a legitimate business reason was articulated. Judge Herndon found that. They have not challenged on appeal the legitimacy of the business reason. And that business reason should stand.
With regard to the independent contractors, on the study that you referred to, I wrote it down, page 1383,
yes.
Whatever that is, that this study, was it comparing the, I'll call them the newly hired exclusive agents to the employee agents as far as productivity? Or was
no.
this some
it was
outside group of people who are on commission versus those not on commission?
It was a profitability study in terms of the average number of policies that were written. And what it compared was the average number of policies written by the employee agents during the preceding periods. And those were declining versus the average number of policies written by the exclusive agent independent contractor agents.
That you had more recently hired.
Well, they were more recent in the sense of in the last 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, okay, but it was an in-house comparison.
Yes, this was a part of the business reasons, which are of record, that the Barry Hutton team put together were they had six different programs. They had all these different agent programs with different commission schedules. They wanted to have better efficiency. It was mass confusion. Secondly, their competitiveness had been restricted by the Internal Revenue Service. The Internal Revenue Service put very tight strictures on how they could treat employee agents as compared to independent contractors, understandably so. And therefore, they found they were not being able to compete with the employee agents in the marketplace because of these restrictions that had been placed upon them by the Internal Revenue Service. Then on top of that, they also did a study which determined who was writing the more policies, who was generating the more business. and it determined who that was. Now, the studies she referring to, that the counsel for plaintiffs referring to, those studies, for the most part, were done by independent consultants. And under the Grants test, Grants case, which Your Honor wrote, another terrific case setting forth the criteria for how one evaluates evidence of that type, they weren't contemporaneous with the decision. They weren't linked to the decision. They weren't given to the decision makers. They weren't part of the decision. And the record on that is very clear. They're conflating bits and pieces of information from different cases at different times and trying to come up with a statement that says, this is age discrimination because Allstate, at some other point in time, with some other groups, looked at some data that never made it to this decision. And it's age discrimination when Allstate terminated nearly 700 people under the age of 40 as part of this decision and then offered everyone, whether they were 80 or whether they were 20, the same four options. I don't think you're going to find any case, and certainly none that this court has been involved in which the same treatment for the same people, regardless of age, somehow becomes age discrimination. That's contrary to the Baldwin.
I guess these earth approaches discriminatory impact, isn't it? She's saying.
I think she's got a discriminatory impact case, which this court has uniformly rejected, not a discriminatory treatment case, but this court has not accepted that as a theory.
You had mentioned that 60% figure, and I just want to be sure I understand what that refers
yes.
to.
What
I was interested in is how many, does the record tell us, how many people took the option that she took, which was, I'm keeping all my rights. 19% or 19 people?
19 people.
Out of?
6,400.
So everybody else took one of these, I'll take some money and...
Right. And, well, many of them took money to stay, and some of them took the economic interest and then sold it to other agents. I mean, the wealth transfer that took place here is astounding because if you were one of the three options, one of the things you got right out front was $5,000. You know, that's $35 million just right there. The economic book of interests, Mr. Snyder had one of the smallest ones. The wealth transfer that took place here as part of this business reorganization directed to the agents was really astounding. In terms of the ERISA, I think the points we made in our brief are fairly straightforward. In conclusion, let me sum up a couple of key points. Number one, they cannot establish the elements of the claim as set forth in the Stone case, the Rogers case, or the Balderston case on any of the elements of the claim. Number two, it cannot be retaliatory as a matter of law to offer someone a huge wealth transfer, and if they choose not to take it, say that that's retaliation. That makes no sense, and this court has never accepted that. Number three, we think that Allstate should have a remedy for its breach of contract, but if the court disagrees with that, it is very important for the court to make clear that if the basis of disagreement is we had no covenant not to sue, that it was clear on the face that everyone understood they could sue. I am very pleased that the EEOC filed its brief here, because the EEOC's brief here and the statements it made to this court on the importance of a lack of a covenant not to sue are precisely the opposite of the position that the EEOC has taken before the court in the Romero litigation, where they argued to the court that everyone knows you shouldn't, that what Allstate was trying to do here was prevent people from suing. In sum, everyone was treated the same. The same options were offered to all people. There was no age discrimination under the authorities of this court. And there were legitimate business reasons which have not been challenged here on appeal. And those legitimate business reasons are, as Your Honor and Your Honor articulated in questions to my opposing counsel, it was a business reorganization. What they were trying to do here was streamline, be more competitive, reduce the problems with the IRS restrictions, increase their penetration in the marketplace, and make more money for all people. And as a result, there was a tremendous wealth transfer that took place from the company to the people who took the first three options. You will find no case, and I've looked hard and low. This is an interesting area of the law. You'll find no case where everyone's been treated the same, and the alleged harm was we offered to pay them millions upon millions of dollars, which they were free to accept or reject. That, when you strip away all the rhetoric, was what plaintiff's case boils down to. Unless the court has any other questions, I think that I've articulated in both in our briefs here this morning what the basic points are from our perspective on appeal. It's always a pleasure, and thank you very much.
I'd just like to ask a question about these about the book. The employee agents, you're saying the book belongs to the company, is that right?
Yes.
So that, and when you transfer to the exclusive agents, they become the the owners of the books. It has to be transferred by you to somebody else, and then they sell it to a third party.
Not quite. We transfer to them not ownership of the book, but ownership and economic interest in the book. It's like a lessee having a right to transfer to someone else. And it was a way of transferring the value of that.
Is it an asset you carry on your books, or does it just become an asset when this transaction takes place?
You know, I'm embarrassed to say I've never looked at that question. I don't know the answer, whether
I'm just trying to see if this is some kind of a mythical value.
Well, it's not mythical in terms of the monies that were paid, and the records replete with the monies were paid, but I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Do you know how much Ms. Isbell's book was that she didn't take? I assume she lost that.
Well, it was never her book. It was the company's book.
The company's book that she had the option to take. And
I don't know the precise amount. My recollection is it was more than the enhanced severance of a year's salary, but I don't remember what that amount was.
Okay.
It was a valuable amount of money, but I don't know how it compared to Schneider's. My recollection is it was not as high as Schneider's, but I don't remember that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Allen?
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to point out that the study that Mr. Godfrey just pointed the court to, page 1383 of the record, was actually part of the presentation that Allstate generated to explain this new program to the employee agents. This was not something that was generated as a decision-making document by Allstate. This is part of their materials where they tell the agents, here's what's going to happen and why. And, of course, at that point, they're not going to say, we're going to fire you because we think you're an aging, unproductive group that's going to cost us a lot of money in terms of health insurance. I would urge the court to look at this, not just the studies, but the fact that Bob Gary, Ed Liddy, and the other executives at Allstate were talking about age and productivity. They were being shown these studies. They were also being shown Allstate's in-house studies. That's really what's at issue here, not so much the consultants. And the consultants testified Allstate was right in there generating these documents with them, talking about hiring young stars, that these agents are older, we need to get rid of them. These were Allstate statistics that were going into these studies. Part of the decision to fire the agents was not just their unproductivity, but also the cost of health insurance. And I'd urge the court to look at the testimony at 521, 522, 523 of the record, 833, 834, 836, where Ed Liddy and Rodney Daniels testified a decision was made to remove these employee agents from the company plan, and that was because they were older. It was a high-risk group. My time is up, and I didn't get a chance to talk about the retaliation case, but I would ask the court to look at our brief and urge the court to reverse this case and remand it for a trial on the merits on those two issues. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Are you done? Also, Mr. Ramshaw, I don't know how you divide it up, but you're all done?
Yes.
Okay. This case will be taken under advisement. Thanks, so.